Welcome to episode 98 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of May 26th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, New York loses the top spot on a top 10 list, but I don't think they're too upset. News about bike lanes in two new cities. The AIDS life cycle begins on Sunday, and a record for ringing bicycle bells. Following the news, it's time to nominate someone for the Portland Livestrong ride, some Ride of Silence reports, an update on Pataki, and much more. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike hammer, just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. The Fredcast is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thanks so much for your PayPal donations, and thank you for clicking on the links on the left-hand side of the page at www.thefredcast.com. Anytime you need to shop, you'll get the same low prices, and the Fredcast gets a little bit to help out with hosting and producing the show. Thanks so much for your support. It is greatly appreciated. Hey, welcome back to the show. I gotta tell you, every time I hear that Jimmy Bratcher song, I just get excited. I love the song and I love doing the show. So welcome back. It's great to have you with us. And before we get started with the news, just a quick announcement. And that is something you've been hearing about for a long time. And I know it because as I grab this humongous stack of postcards here, I know that you've all been listening. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it is that this is show number 98. And that means that we are closing in on number 100 of our regular episodes. Of course, I think I've done more than 150 podcasts all in all about cycling, but this is the 100th regular episode of the Fredcast that's coming up. And to celebrate, we have a contest going on. Now, the contest is pretty simple. All you need to do between now and when I release show number 99, and that's next week, folks, so you've just got a couple of days to get your entries in. All you've got to do is send me a postcard from the city in which you live, a picture postcard preferably. Show me where you live, and between shows number 99 and 100, we will randomly select one of these postcards to win one of, quite a number of prizes. And the prizes are being donated by Training Peaks, Polar Pack, Spot, Erg Video, iBike, Road Rash Repair Kit, Dave Shields and Saul Raisin, Ride Clean, Cycle Film, and Nike. The details are all on the website at www.thefredcast.com. There's a link at the top of the page, very, very top of the page. It says Contest, and that's where you can get all the info that you need to get entered into the contest. Topping the news this week is the fact that New York City is no longer number one on the top 10 list. Well, now this is sort of a dubious list, so it's not such a bad thing for those of you in New York. I love New York. I've got family and friends who live there, and I love visiting New York. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to be able to get to New York in the fall for their MS Bike Tour, their Bike MS event coming up in the fall, so you can check out that. But why are they no longer number one? Well, I heard from my friend Donna Tosi over at Kryptonite. You know that Kryptonite makes great bicycle locks. And every year they do some research and they put together a list of the top 10 cities for bicycle theft. And for year after year after year, it has seemed that New York has topped that list with the dubious distinction of being the city that has the most bicycle thefts out of all in the United States. This year, the list is as follows. I'm going to do it David Letterman style, starting with number 10. Well, but what sounds like it should be the bicycle capital of the country if you ask, oh, I don't know, a guy like Lance Armstrong. Number 10, Austin, Texas. Number 9, the place where you park your car in the Harvard Yard. It's Cambridge, Massachusetts. And number 8, New Haven, Connecticut. Number 7, Denver, Colorado. There's a tie for number 5, Tucson, Arizona, and what is probably the bicycle capital of the United States, Portland, Oregon. Number 4, the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. And in number 3, dropping to number 3 like a rock, is New York City. Number 2 is Chicago. And number 1, the city of brotherly love, or perhaps the city of stealing your bike love, it's Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. As Donna Tosi says, she is shocked by the fact that New York City is no longer at number one and that they fell so far. It really is perhaps a testament to the kinder, gentler New York City that has emerged post 9/11. Now, perhaps a testament to why Philadelphia is at the top of the list. It was really funny. I'm researching this story that Donna sent me about the fact that New York is no longer number one and that Philadelphia is. And lo and behold, I find a story that shows that a man was wounded last week in Philadelphia in a gun battle as two people fought over, you guessed it, a bicycle. It says a gun battle in South Philadelphia sparked by an argument about a bicycle critically injured a man thought to be a bystander, police said. About a dozen shots were fired when a 32-year-old man was struck in the chest and left knee. The victim, whom police did not identify, was taken to the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. Authorities were waiting to interview him before they confirmed that he was not a part of the argument. So if you live in Philadelphia, be on your guard, get a kryptonite lock, and of course, Kryptonite's got some great tips for making sure that you lock your bike properly, because you'll remember the interview we did with Carlton Reed from Bike Biz magazine, who indicated that no matter how good your lock is, if you don't lock your bike properly, you could fall prey to bicycle thieves. Oh, and one more note, something that I thought was really interesting about this top 10 list. If you look at who's on the list, cities like Austin, Cambridge, New Haven, Portland, Tucson, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, there's a lot of universities and colleges in these towns that are on this list. The question in my mind is that one of the reasons why so many more bikes are stolen? Because let's face it, there are a lot of university and college students who ride their bikes instead of driving a car or walking. So could that be one of the reasons? I don't know, but it is food for thought. Let's talk about a little bit of professional racing news. As we talked about last week, the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya has been taking place. That was from May 19th through the 25th. This was the Pro Tour event going on. I know everybody's focused on the Giro d'Italia, but once again, the Giro is not in the Pro Tour this year. This is one of the oldest races on the UCI Pro Tour calendar. It was first held in 1911, and this year's event was won by Gustavo Cesar Veloso from Spain. Second place went to Rigoberto Urán from Colombia and Castapagna, and third went to Francis Rémy Pauriol from Crédit Agricole. Fourth, Josep Jufre Pau from Spain and Sonier Duval, and fifth went to Daniel Navarro Garcia, also from Spain, and Team Astana. Now, since this was a Pro Tour event, you would expect that this might have some sort of an effect on the Pro Tour standings, but the guys that are at the top of the Pro Tour standings right now, well, quite frankly, they're racing the Giro. So as it stands right now, the current rankings in the 2008 UCI Pro Tour, just like last week, in first place, Damiano Cuniego, in second, Andre Greipel, and in third, Alberto Contador. Slight change in the team standings, Astana still in first place, Team CSC takes over second, Cas Duparna is in third. As far as the nations are concerned, Spain is in first, Italy is in second, and Belgium is in third place. Once again, the next races coming up on the Pro Tour calendar, the Critérium du Dauphiné Libéré, once again, a traditional preparation race for a lot of the pros as they get ready for the Tour de France. That's June 8th through the 15th, and then June 14th through the 22nd is the Tour of Switzerland. If you're interested in both of those races, there are links in the show notes. Well, the Giro d'Italia is going on right now, and it will finish this coming Sunday as the racers have a time trial in the streets of Milan, Italy. But between now and then, there are a couple of tough mountain stages coming up. And in the lead right now, wearing the Maglia Rosa, the pink leader's jersey of the Giro d'Italia, is last year's Tour de France winner, Alberto Contador, from Team Astana. The fact that Contador is leading the general classification after 18 stages has had a lot of people wondering whether these results might have ASO, the Amaury Sports Organization, the organizers of the Tour de France, whether this might have them rethinking their decision not to allow Astana and Alberto Contador into the 2008 Tour de France. My personal opinion is that they've made their decision and they are not going to change it. They feel very embarrassed by last year's Team Astana, and as a result, no matter what the final results of this first Grand Tour of the 2008 season, I don't think ASO is going to change their mind. Nevertheless, Alberto Contador is leading after 18 stages. He's at 75 hours, 45 minutes, and 17 seconds. He's followed closely behind by Italy's Riccardo Ricco from Sonier Duval. He's 41 seconds back in second place. In third, Gilberto Simoni from Italy, 1 minute 21 seconds back. Sitting in fourth in the general classification, Marzio Brusagin from Italy in Team Lamprey, 2 minutes back. And in fifth, Franco Pellizzotti, also from Italy in Team Liquigas, 2 minutes and 5 seconds back. In sixth, Danilo Di Luca from Italy, 2 minutes, 18 seconds back. In seventh, it's Denis Menchov from Team Rabobank, 2:47 back. Emmanuel Sella from Italy is in eighth place, 4 minutes, 25 seconds back. In ninth, Jürgen van den Broek from Belgium and Silence Lotto, 4:26 back. And in 10th place, Domenico Pozzovivo from Italy, 5 minutes, 25 seconds back. Now, today's 18th stage was won by one of my favorite professional cyclists. I just think he's gritty and tough and a classy guy as well. Jens Voigt from Team CSC won in a solo breakaway today, coming in well over a minute ahead of the rest of the pack, actually just ahead of Paolo Bettini. Meanwhile, Contador came in just about 8 minutes later after Bettini, leading the peloton to maintain his status as the race's leader. Now, one of the stories that came out this week that had a lot of people just really impressed, and quite frankly, if you've been following professional cycling for any amount of time, you know that there are, well, there's certain sportsmanlike rules that go on between the cyclists. Alliances are made and broken day after day. When people get into breakaways, they tend to make alliances and make deals. Who's going to win the points? Who's going to win the KOM points? Who's going to win the sprint points? Who's going to win at the end of the day? Well, Britain's Mark Cavendish has already won a couple of stages in this year's Giro d'Italia. And at the end of stage 18, when it came time for he and teammate Andre Greipel to cross the finish line, Cavendish, who'd already won two stages, eased up and let his teammate Greipel go across the finish line for the stage win. Partially because he's a teammate, partially because Cavendish had won a couple of stages earlier in the Giro, but also, in Cavendish's words, to thank Greipel for the work that he's been doing for him and for Team High Road in this year's Giro. Just another example of sort of the beauty and the grace and the sportsmanlike behavior of professional cyclists. And it's all there in Italy at the 2008 Giro d'Italia. More and final results on next week's show. Earlier, I mentioned Team Astana and the embarrassment that Team Astana brought to the Tour de France last year. Well, speaking of embarrassment in last year's Tour de France, you will all remember Michael Rasmussen and the amazing performance that he put in and the lead that he built up over Alberto Contador when he was wearing the yellow jersey in the 2007 Tour de France. But then you will also recall that it all came crashing down as media reports circulated that Rasmussen was being investigated for having given false information to his team and to drug testing representatives as far as his whereabouts prior to the Tour de France. As a result of having been fired by Team Rabobank last year after the Tour de France, Michael Rasmussen is now suing his former team for wrongful dismissal. Lawyers representing Michael Rasmussen and the Dutch Pro Tour team Rabobank will appear in court in Utrecht in the Netherlands on June 5th for a preliminary hearing in this case. We'll see what happens. Seems like, from at least what we've heard in the media, and we all know that the media isn't always right, but from what we've heard in the media, I'm not so sure that Rasmussen has much of a case. We shall see in the days and weeks to come. Well, bad news for racers and race fans last weekend in Durango, Colorado. Every year in Durango, there is a race from Durango to Silverton known as the Iron Horse Bicycle Classic. The proverbial Iron Horse, starts from Durango at the same time that the cyclists start from Durango and head up over the Molas Pass on their way to Silverton. The Durango to Silverton railway train tries to beat the cyclists as they head up over the Molas Pass, but last weekend, unfortunately due to snow and whiteout conditions on the 10,500-foot pass, organizers had to cancel the Iron Horse for only the second time in its 37-year history. It's unfortunate for the racers and for the racing fans, but it all is for the safety of the racers. I've got to tell you, I had the chance. This probably was in the very early 90s when I was working for the parent company of Tioga, a big mountain bike component firm at the time. We were sponsoring John Tomac. John was known as a mountain biker, but he rode the Iron Horse that year on his road bike and had the chance to drive the course in a car. And I got out of breath just sitting in the car and driving. I couldn't imagine what the racers were feeling as they were doing the Iron Horse. It's a great race. If you ever have a chance, it's also a beautiful part of the country here in the United States. If you've ever got the chance to go check out the Iron Horse Bicycle Classic, it is worth it. And you will have your chance again next year, weather gods permitting. Hey, if you're looking to make some vacation plans this year, and if you've always thought of going on a cruise as being for the sedentary set, those who like midnight buffets and lots of drinking and sitting around and not really doing a whole lot, it's time to think again, because Crystal Cruise Lines has just introduced a program that they call the Tour de Spin. The program, according to their website, is inspired by top cyclist Lance Armstrong and led by onboard instructors. It'll utilize Le Monde Life fitness bikes and include three virtual Tour de France rides on spin bikes. In addition, the cruise line is going to donate funds to the Lance Armstrong Foundation for every Crystal Cruise Line guest who participates. They're going to have a variety of rides. There's going to be three of them. One is Les Alpes, which they describe as a multi-level profile, which can include flat, medium mount, and mountain stages. A time trial, which they're calling an interval workout where cyclists race alone against the clock. And the Alpe d'Huez, a mind-body climb, maximizing guests' cycling potential. So for those of you who are looking for a vacation, maybe you've been thinking about a cruise, here's a great way to stay in shape and benefit the Lance Armstrong Foundation at the same time. I've got a link in the show notes to the Crystal Cruises website. I thought it was interesting. I've never been on a cruise. I've never really been inclined to do so, but programs like this just might help. The one thing that I did think was interesting, however, and I don't think that Crystal Cruises probably thought about this, is the fact that it was, quote, inspired by Lance Armstrong, and they're going to be donating funds to the Lance Armstrong Foundation, but the guests are going to be using Le Monde fitness bikes. I wonder how Armstrong and Le Monde would feel about that. Well, it is still National Bike Month. There's a couple of days left, and we've been talking about getting more people to ride, and we've also talked a little bit about motorists versus cyclists. We've got some stories coming up after the news on that, but one great bit of news is that New Orleans, Louisiana, their first bicycle lane has opened, taking riders through neighborhoods that were scarred not only by Hurricane Katrina, but also by poverty, but also representing the kind of progressive thinking that planners hope will bring people back to some of these hard-hit areas. There's a 3-mile wide striped path that winds along St. Cloud Avenue through the lower Ninth Ward into the St. Bernard Parish line, past areas that are slowly recovering from Hurricane Katrina. According to Regional Planning Commission Senior Transportation Planner Karen Parsons, quote, it's one of the most tangible signs of recovery, a means of sustainability, a means of livability, a means of connectivity between neighborhoods. I think that's great news for New Orleans. Hopefully we'll hear more about that in the years to come as New Orleans recovers, and hopefully we get more folks from New Orleans out on their bikes. Meanwhile, in New York City, Transportation Commissioner Jeanette Sadiq Khan, who is herself a cyclist, has instituted a test bike lane that is what's known as a protected bike lane. And this is on 9th Avenue in New York. It's a short distance, but there's a concrete barrier that separates the traffic from the bikes. And of course, you've got the sidewalk and then the parked cars and then the bikes and then the concrete barrier and then the traffic. You can imagine how much more comfortable that is for New York City cyclists to know that they are relatively safe for motorists, because you never know about those opening doors on the parked cars. Nevertheless, so far, this has gotten some pretty good feedback. They're considering extending it even farther and perhaps also putting one in on 8th Avenue as they extend and continue this test to see whether or not these protected bike lanes will be useful and used by cyclists. If you live in the city of New York and you have a chance to try these out, please do, and let the Transportation Commission know your thoughts on these protected bike lanes. Also, if you live in New York, you've had a chance to try these, let me know how they work and whether or not you like them or you don't like them. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts. Well, a lot of times on the show, we talk about races and centuries and things like that, but we also talk about rides that raise money for a cause. And this coming Sunday, June the 1st, more than 2,500 cyclists and 500 volunteer roadies begin a 7-day, 545-mile bike ride to Los Angeles from the Bay Area in San Francisco for the 7th annual AIDS Life Cycle. By the time they get to LA, they will have raised more than $11 million for the cause. And no other annual event raises more money for HIV/AIDS services and prevention. In the last 6 years, AIDS Life Cycle has raised, can you believe it, more than $40 million. Now, on day one, on Sunday, cyclists depart from Daly City and ride nearly 80 miles to Santa Cruz. Riders and volunteers will take part in a moving opening ceremony before setting off on their journey. And a week later, they'll arrive in Los Angeles to be greeted by thousands of friends, supporters, media, and well-wishers for an inspirational closing ceremony. To everyone participating in this year's AIDS Life Cycle, and especially to Team Ventura and listener Casey, we wish you tailwinds and a safe journey as you make your way down the California coast from Northern California to Southern California to raise money for a very important cause. Good luck to you all. By the way, beginning on June the 2nd, you will be able to find journals and photos and blogs online at experience.aidslifecycle.org, and I have put a link in the show notes so that you can share with those who are participating in this year's event. Finally tonight, last weekend, Toronto, Canada was holding its Green Festival, and as part of the celebration and as part of trying to convince people to lead green lives, a number of people, more than 1,000 perhaps, attempted to break the Guinness World Record for simultaneously ringing bicycle bells. The authorities passed out more than 800 bells, with many, many others arriving on bikes already equipped with bells. Now, the current record was 503, and with the 800 given out and all of the people who were registered and videotaped, they are now going to be sending this list and all of the records to Guinness to see if they can make it in the Guinness Book of World Record. Now, what they did was they simultaneously rang their bells in time with entertainer Chris McCool, who had written a special song just for the event. That is a great way to ring out the news for this episode of the Fredcast. Time after time here on the Fredcast, I've talked to you about my friend Noreen, and she manages Team Rubicon. And they do a lot of fundraising, and they do a lot of work with the Lance Armstrong Foundation. They visit kids with cancer and hospitals. They do a great deal. It's just a wonderful thing that they do as professional racers to take time out and give back. Well, because of the work that they do, they are given a spot in the Livestrong ride in Portland each year. And Team Rubicon is once again giving away their spot in the Portland Livestrong Challenge to a cancer survivor. And they are looking for nominations. Now, the Portland Livestrong ride takes place on June 29th of this year. So we need to get your nominations in very, very quickly. But if you want to nominate someone for the spot, send an email to Team Rubicon, and I've put a link in the show notes. Type the word nomination in the subject line, and then tell Team Rubicon why you're nominating the individual that you are nominating. They only have one spot to give away, and the spot will include a VIP dinner on Saturday night where Lance himself has been known to break bread with participants. The only catch in this whole deal is that the person nominated will have to be able to get themselves to Portland, Oregon themselves. But as Noreen says, it is worth it as the challenge takes place on the Nike campus. The ride again is June 29th. For more info, you can go to www.livestrong.org and select Get Involved, then select Livestrong Challenge Portland. Thanks for your nominations and good luck to your nominee. Last week, we talked about how May 21st was the annual Ride of Silence around the world, and I asked you to send me your reports from your experiences at these Rides of Silence around the world. I got a couple of reports. The first, kind of an ironic one, coming from listener Frank from Greenville, South Carolina. In an ironic turn of events, a car came close to hitting at least two cyclists participating in last Wednesday night's Ride of Silence. Hours later, the driver of the car was charged with two counts of driving under the influence, possession of marijuana, open container, and a seatbelt violation. Now, the near miss happened on Highway 101 near Highway 417. At about 8 p.m., two Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office cars were leading the cyclist, and another officer was directing traffic. What an idiot this guy was. According to Major Dan Johnson of the Sheriff's Office, Green, who was driving a gray Honda traveling about 55 miles per hour, ignored the directing officer, nearly hitting the cyclist. Johnson said that one of the officers then began to pursue the speeding car, but backed off only after a few miles because the chase accelerated to speeds too high for safety. Green then wrecked his car on Highway 101 near I-85. Johnson said that the vehicle hit the median and flipped. Both Green and an 18-year-old passenger in the car were taken to the hospital. Both were treated and released, but Green was arrested and booked into the Spartanburg County Detention Facility at about 1:50 a.m. Thursday. Thankfully, none of the cyclists were injured. How ironic is that? Meanwhile, listener, and man, I hope I don't mess up your name here, but listener Kieran from Canberra said, "Your recent podcast wanted feedback on the Ride of Silence. My understanding is that this was the first Ride of Silence in Canberra and was organized with 3 weeks' notice, but the Vikings Cycling Club was able to put it together. The ride was participated by five groups: road riders, triathletes, mountain bike riders, recreational riders, and recumbent riders. And it was great to get the whole cycling community together. The Amy Gillette Foundation were appropriately represented in this activity. Although a beautiful sunny day in Canberra, the temperature at the start of the ride was only about 5 degrees Celsius. That didn't stop, in my estimation, over 400 cyclists riding in the parliamentary triangle in Canberra. My only regret is that I didn't have a camera with me to take photos." How awesome is that? Thank you so much, both of you, for sending those reports, and I hope that all of you will have the opportunity to participate in your local Ride of Silence next May. Now, I've got an update to a story I talked about on last week's show. You remember we talked about Alessandro Pataki and how he was banned for the use of the drug salbutamol, and, well, I sort of took WADA and anti-doping authorities to task because I felt that if the guy legitimately had asthma and he needed the medicine, that perhaps they were coming down a bit too hard on him for simply using a medicine that he needed. But listener Tom from Raleigh sent me an Associated Press article that appeared in the USA Today last year during the Tour de France. And I think that this one calls me to task. Basically, what the article says, and I honestly, I have to admit, I didn't realize this, up to 40% of riders have doctor's notes allowing them to use drugs that are often prescribed for asthma that would normally be banned. And according to the article, critics decry the practice, which is allowed under WADA rules. According to Dr. Werner Franke, a German doping expert, quote, "This is a global joke. You'll always find a doctor who will write down a few notes that you have asthma-like difficulties in breathing. It would be fair to have two Tours de France, one for the asthmatics and one for non-asthmatics. The funny thing," he said, "is that the asthmatics would be much faster. And that, according to the article, is because drugs like salbutamol help asthmatics breathe easier and can have performance-enhancing effects." The article goes on to say that despite cycling officials' attempts to clean up the sport, which has been tarnished, as we all know, over the last years by allegations that high-profile riders have used banned substances like the blood booster EPO, the tour continues to be shadowed by doping concerns, and that was true last year. But the bottom line of the article is this. This salbutamol is being used by way more riders than would be in the normal population's proportion to non-asthmatics and asthmatics. And if that is the case, then I think that this salbutamol situation does bear some investigation, and I've got to, at least cautiously, take back some of my comments from last week about Alessandro Pataki. Because if indeed this is a case where we have an athlete who is using the drug, but who may not necessarily need it, and I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but if that is the case, as this article says, then I think that perhaps last week I was wrong. We may never know, but I thought that Tom's giving me this article was important, and that I needed to pass it along to you so that you could really understand, as I now do, the full scope of the issue surrounding asthmatic cyclists and the use of drugs like salbutamol. Very interesting. Hey, one more update to last week's show, and this one was a question that was posed to me by listener Kurt in an email today. He is a triathlete, and he said that he enjoyed last week's interview with Chris McCormick, the Ironman world champion, but that what he was really waiting for was that question of, hey, Chris, how much training do you do every week? Listen to Chris's answer as it played on last week's show.
I do some heavy blocks of work, and I tend to swim about 20 miles a week. I'm riding anywhere between 400 and 500 miles on the bike, and I run 50 miles a week. So it's
I don't know about you, but I couldn't quite make out what it was Chris said about how many miles a week that he runs, and so. Kurt, thanks for pointing that out. I'm sorry I didn't notice it sooner. I've sent an email to Chris. I'm sure he'll get back to me when he's got some time, and I will get back to everyone on the show next week to let you know how many miles a week is it that Chris runs. Next up, another item that was sent to me by a listener. This was sent to me by listener Norman, and he wanted you all to know, well, he listens to both the Fredcast and the Spokesman, and recently on the Spokesman, we were talking about tire inflation and about properly inflating your tires based on the inflation ratings on the sidewalls. What Norman wanted to know was that that may not be the best idea, and as proof, he sent me a link from Bethel Cycle in Bethel, Connecticut. It's a story written by Greg Pelican, and I've put a link in the show notes. Essentially, the situation was he had a customer who inflated his Vittoria tires to 150 PSI because that was the max rating shown on the sidewall of the tires. But unfortunately, the rims that the customer was using could not handle the pressure, and literally the side of the rim blew out, not the side of the tire. Now, as a result of this experience, Greg Pelican, the author of the article, recommends essentially, at the end of the article, he says, the takeaway message here is to never inflate clincher tires more than 125 PSI. And he goes on to say that if you have to remember that as heat increases, and of course heat comes from friction, and friction comes from simply riding your bike, as the heat increases, so does the pressure. So even if your tire says that it will go up to 150 PSI, from this article and from the author's discussions with companies such as Zip and others, it probably is a good idea to inflate your tires to 125 PSI or less. And as we discussed on The Spokesman, there is research to indicate, and this can be counterintuitive, that the higher the pressure, actually, the higher the rolling resistance. In other words, if you fill your tires too high, you actually will go slower. A lot of people think the harder the tire, the faster you're going to go. But it has to do with the way that the tires are designed and the contact patch that it puts down on the road. So be smart about the inflation of your tires. And the most important thing, the biggest lesson to learn from this, is do not overinflate your tires, your clincher tires on your bike. Because it's one thing to have a tire blowout. It's another thing entirely to have a rim blowout. I've never seen it before. The author of the article says they haven't seen it before, but it sounds like something which could happen and something you need to protect against when you inflate your tires. Well, earlier in the show, we talked about the cities that are known for bicycle thefts, and I was mentioning that I felt that Portland, Oregon might just be the bike culture capital of the country. And there is an upcoming event in Portland that you are going to want to know about if you're in the area. It's called Cycle Scene 08, and the subtitle is Picturing Portland's Bike Culture. It's an art exhibition featuring photography and two-dimensional artwork on the theme of Portland's current bike culture. It takes place from May 15th through July the 3rd in 9 locations around town. Of course, I've got a link in the show notes to where you can find more information. And when you go to this website and you take a look at some of these photos, some of them are absolutely fantastic, and I would love to see them in larger life and, of course, in more detail than you can get on the internet. In conjunction with Cycle Scene 08, there's a number of rides. There's one on June the 14th. It is about a 30-mile ride. On June the 22nd, there's a family-friendly ride. And then on June the 24th, there is another ride for people who can ride during a weekday and eat breakfast mid-morning. Take a look at the show notes and take a look at the links where you can find more information about Cycle Scene 08 in Portland, Oregon. Now, another upcoming event for you. This one takes place June 3rd through the 8th. This is the Commerce Bank Triple Crown of Cycling, and it's recognized nationally and internationally as America's most prestigious series of professional road races. As you know, this takes place in Reading, Allentown, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And this year, they are looking for volunteers. Those interested in competitive cycling or the outdoors are encouraged to sign up as volunteers or just to come out and watch the races for free. Coordinators still need volunteers, especially course marshals in Allentown for June the 3rd and Philadelphia for June the 8th. The Reading race is June the 5th. Events begin at 10 a.m. And by the way, if you're worried about being a course marshal, don't worry. No experience is needed for volunteering. I've put a link in the show notes. You can go to procyclingtour.com to get all the information you need. But here's a great way to see a great race and be involved in it as well. Go ahead and volunteer for the Triple Crown of Cycling. And finally tonight, just a reminder, you'll recall that in show number 92, I reviewed Johan Bruneel's new book, We Might As Well Win. I told you that it was going to be coming out on June the 4th. That's next week. It's time to order your book. Hopefully, you'll enjoy it as much as I did. I think it's a great read. And one of the reviewers, there's actually a review on Amazon already, indicating that the person who read it said their problem was when they got through with it, they were really upset. They had hoped that it would have gone on a lot longer. So I put a link in the show notes as well as into the Enhanced podcast where you can go and buy Johan Bruneel's new book. It was a great read. I really enjoyed it, and I recommend it to all of you. Okay, well, that is going to do it for tonight's show. Just before we go, before we get into the PodSafe Cycling music, just a couple of reminders of how you can stay in contact with the Fredcast between shows. First and foremost, check out the website at www.thefredcast.com. In the last week or so, I've put up a couple of blog posts. I haven't talked about either of them on the show. A couple of interesting items that I think you'll find of interest to you, www.thefredcast.com. Also, if you want to know what's going on in the life of the Fredcast at any given moment, the best way to do that is to follow me on Twitter. You can go to twitter.com/Fredcast and follow along, or you can send a text message to Twitter, and that's 40404 with the words follow Fredcast. And if you're going to get that on your cell phone, just remember normal text messaging rates do apply. Otherwise, Twitter's absolutely free. And of course, get yourself your own Twitter username and sort of join this micro social network, which is evolving on Twitter. Of course, also, you can send me an email at any time. My email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And that's both for your text emails as well as for any audio comments that you want to insert. But of course, if you don't have the ability to create audio on your computer, don't worry about it. You can call the Fredcast listener hotline at 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373, or give us a call via Skype. The Skype name is The Fredcast. Just realize, if you do leave me a voicemail and you want me to use it on the show, please leave me your email address just in case I need to follow up with you. Okay, and with that, it is time for tonight's PodSafe Cycling music. And tonight's PodSafe Cycling music comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And I love it when this happens, when a well-known band like this one allows their music to be played on podcasts. I think it's awesome. This is a band called Collective Soul. This is their new song, All That I Know, from their new album, Asylums. Great song. I hope that you enjoy it. So thanks again for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. And thanks for all your emails and audio comments and everything that you send our way. And of course, for supporting the show through your donations and by clicking the links of our advertisers on the website. It is greatly appreciated. So between this show and next, just a quick reminder to get your postcards in to enter the contest. And I hope that you enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Tomorrow waits, it's sure to show. You're all Hallelujah.